Hello, I'm Victoria Armstrong, a partner in the real estate healthcare team here at DAC Beechcroft. I'm pleased to welcome you to the latest episode in our NHS Estates podcast series. For this episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Ben Farline, a solicitor in our NHS real estate team here at DAC Beechcroft. Our focus today is how NHS organisations can sell surplus land or buildings by public auction, which can be a fast and transparent route when done right. We've actually already discussed the processes and guidelines for disposing of NHS-owned property in episode 6 of our NHS Estate series of podcasts, which explains key principles, legal elements, and best practices generally. So that would be a good one to go and listen to for that wider discussion on the requirements and processes to follow in respect of surplus land before a disposal method is chosen. So Ben, auction sale is a relatively popular route for the sale of property by NHS organisations, and particularly in relation to properties where it is reasonable to expect a good amount of interest from prospective purchasers, or where it's maybe difficult to establish the value of a property. Why do you think it's so popular?
So I think it's mainly popular due to speed and a competitive bidding environment. It also benefits from transparency, which is a key principle when disposing of NHS property. Auctions are ideal where the property has broad market appeal or where the sort of pricing and value is uncertain. Part B, section 4.143 of the Estate Code sets out the pros and advantages, which include that the property is available to a wide market, the conditions of public accountability are seen to be satisfied in auction sales, the vendor can be satisfied that on the day the best possible price for the property was obtained, the element of competition can lead to a price in excess of the estimated market value on disposal, and the sale is certain as the contract's established on the day of the auction.
That all sounds good, but presumably there are disadvantages.
Yes. So generally, we do have less flexibility when agreeing the terms of the sale. I'll come on to this later on, but we are generally expected to use the established general auction conditions as a basis for the sale, which are comprehensive, and while we can amend them to some extent, they do give less room for detailed and bespoke provisions. The Estate Code generally requires NHS trusts to examine the creditworthiness of potential purchasers before any bid is accepted. But as bids are accepted at auction, result in a binding contract, and the purchaser has to pay a 10% deposit immediately following a successful bid. It's not typical that we'd check bidders' creditworthiness prior to any auction. The Estate Code identifies the potential disadvantages as being that some purchasers dislike auction procedures, so their bid may therefore be lost, which kind of narrows down the pool of potential buyers. And rings can be formed by interested parties in the auction process who deal with the land and property between themselves after the auction and after one purchase has been successful, which might reduce competition and can also lead to a reduction in the sale price.
Mm. So in terms of the auction itself, what is the process when selling at auction?
So the first step is to find an auction house. It's usually best to find an auction house with local knowledge and to discuss selling options and agree on the auctioneer's fees. The auctioneer will typically provide a valuation to help establish an optimum guide and reserve price, which will be the minimum acceptable price. The reserve price should be set in consultation with a suitably qualified valuer, and this will only be known to those involved in the sale and not to any of the potential buyers who are bidding. The seller will also need to instruct a solicitor to compile a legal pack for the auction. The legal pack will usually contain essential information about the property for potential buyers to view before the auction date. The auction house will manage property viewings and handle buyer inquiries. On the day of the auction, the buyers will submit their bids, usually online nowadays, but this could potentially be in person, and the highest bidder who meets the reserve price will secure the property. The winning bidder will pay a 10% deposit on the auction day, and contracts are often treated as exchanged at that point. The buyer will be expected to complete the purchase within a set time frame, and in the standard auction conditions, that's 20 working days.
Thanks for that, Ben. That sounds really efficient, actually. In terms of the legal pack, which is where we tend to first come into this process, what does that contain? What should we publish?
So typically, the more information, the better in these cases. So, you know, just so that the buyers feel confident in order to put a bid in, and so that you don't, you know, exclude potential buyers who might be a bit more risk averse. So when we're preparing a legal pack, a comprehensive legal pack, again, you know, it'll often increase the level of interest in the property. And this should include, you know, title documents, searches to the extent that any are obtained, replies to CPSE inquiries, an asbestos report, if required by the asbestos regulations, and the auction contract with any special conditions. We would ordinarily use the latest edition of the common auction conditions as the base, and then include, obviously, special conditions as needed.
So Ben, when you say special conditions, what would they usually include? And importantly, are we able to vary the auction conditions to reflect the estate code, for instance?
So yeah, in respect of the special conditions, obviously yes, we can make a number of amendments, and we recommend that the following provisions are inserted. So the buyer would typically assume responsibility for all environmental liability in respect of the property and shall be required to indemnify the seller in respect of any liability incurred following completion. If the property forms part of a wider hospital site, the buyer would typically be required to install separate meters and service media to the property being disposed within a period of, say, 6 months. And we typically enter a restriction again to the title prohibiting any disposals by the buyer until these works are completed. The seller will also reserve a right to enter the property to inspect these works, and we'd also include step-in rights for the seller to complete the works if they're not completed by the buyer, and a provision for the seller to recover their costs, being a debt due on demand. We would also ensure that the special conditions shall reserve sufficient rights of access, services and maintenance of sort of plant and equipment for the seller, and any obligations on the buyer would be to, you know, not object to any future healthcare development in respect of land adjacent to the property. Where the property, you know, constitutes a site that would be suitable for development, would need to consider any overage and clawback provisions in favour of the seller, just to capture any development uplift in compliance with the trust's duties to obtain, you know, the best value for money for the following any disposals. A special condition should also include a provision that the property should be sold as seen, including any, you know, chattels therein, and should exclude any obligation on the seller to remove any items or any rubbish from the property, and prohibit, you know, the buyer from delaying completion or refusing to complete as a result of anything at the property at the date of completion. We'd also recommend that the form of transfer should be annexed to the special conditions rather than sort of, you know, the provisions of the transfer set out therein, and include covenant by the buyer to indemnify the seller in respect of any title matters and anything noted on the register of title to the property. The special conditions should also provide for additional fees payable by the buyer for the disposal team to carry out any money laundering checks on the buyer in the event they haven't instructed a solicitor to complete the transaction. So we'd also recommend that the common auction conditions are updated so that the requirement for the buyer to insure from the date of auction should be removed. The seller should still insure the property until completion, largely in the event that the property is covered by the NHS property expenses scheme, as obviously the property would still remain in the trust's ownership until the date of completion. And the buyer would also be expected to reimburse the seller's costs in respect of any searches, and this should be covered in the contract, but typically the standard auction conditions include this in any event.
Mm. Thanks, Ben. And in terms of the auction itself, how is the reserve set for the property?
So the reserve's typically set confidentially and after the advice to the trust provided by both the valuer and the auctioneer. This will reflect the best consideration available or that we would expect to be available. And this can be reviewed if, you know, pre-auction offers come in later and, you know, potentially indicate a higher value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Obviously, the buyer will pay a deposit at auction, and that will be dealt with by the auction house. What checks will apply, for instance, money laundering regulations?
So the auctioneers will be required to verify the buyer's identity under the money laundering regulations. For large disposals, the trusts will often pre-qualify bidders and seek proof of funds before the auction. We'd also recommend that the solicitors on the disposal team carry out additional money laundering checks on the buyer, especially in respect of lower value disposals, just so there's an extra layer of protection there.
Yeah, that's good advice. So generally, it sounds like preparation is key to securing best value of a property, which means a lot of work before the day of auction. What happens following the auction?
So following the auction, the contract will typically exchange instantaneously following the successful bid. The buyer will sign the memorandum of auction and hand over a 10% deposit, and completion will typically take place 20 working days later.
So that sounds straightforward. There can be situations where a buyer defaults on that timescale, can't there? what happens if a buyer fails to complete on the completion date specified in the contract?
So in the event that the contract doesn't complete on the auction date specified in the conditions, the default position is that the trust may serve a notice to complete, and that will require the buyer to complete within 10 working days of the proposed completion date. In the event that the buyer still refuses to complete, the trust may then retain the deposit paid at auction and can remarket the property for sale. In the event that the buyer refuses to complete or is unable to complete, we recommend specialist legal advice is sought from a property litigation solicitor.
And worst case scenario, no bids at auction, what happens then?
So the trust can negotiate post auction, but it shouldn't agree a sale price below the reserve without the valuer's advice and without potentially a fresh valuation. All offers and decisions must be filed to keep the trust's auditors happy and ensure that all of the trust's obligations have been complied with throughout.
Thanks, Ben. So presuming the auction, you know, has been successful and the auction sale completes, are there any loose ends that would need to be dealt with by a trust following completion?
Yes, so the trust should arrange key handover with the agent or the auctioneer, dependent on sort of whether the auctioneer is appointed a third-party agent, prepare to move any sort of boarding from the property if it's, you know, been boarded up to protect the property, update the trust's asset register and estate terrier, and cancel any sort of utilities supplied to the premises. The trust should also update the local authority for rating purposes, and a lessons learnt review following the disposal is always useful.
Absolutely. Thanks, Ben. That's been really useful. Do you have any final comments or tips for the listeners in relation to this?
Yes, I think the things to keep in mind are always transparency, keep an audit trail of everything in relation to the disposal, sort of pre-auction, the auction pack, and then post-completion, and following the guidance in HBN 0008, the estate code, just to keep the trust compliant and to maximise value for the disposal.
Fab. That's great. Thanks, Ben. That's a really useful note to end on. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Watch out for our next episode in our series of NHS Estates podcasts.